And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business, business, business. Each of my guests is discussing a topic that can be directly applied to business. My next guest is a 30-year veteran of the financial industry who's also roamed the corridors of Washington, D.C. We'll discuss the unintended consequences of the Dodd-Frank financial reform bill for both the financial industry and for consumers. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Bill Sinclair has spent much of his career in Washington, D.C., but try not to hold that against him. He knows top policymakers and creating policy today. Bill has been an experienced professional in the financial services arena for over 30 years, as I said. During his career, Bill has been an active faculty member of the Federal Reserve System, the Mortgage Bankers Association, AT&T's Banking School, and the Federal Financial Institution Examination Council, serving as an expert on mortgage and investment banking and the secondary markets. He served as president of the Greater Washington Board of Trade, as well as the boards of the Federal Home Loan Bank of Atlanta, the Republic Mortgage Insurance Company, the Greater Washington Financial Institutions Association, and the National Capital YMCA of Washington, D.C., Washington Federal, American Federal, and Perpetual American Bank. As a banking leader and a banking and a political analyst, Bill will discuss the consequences, both intended and unintended, of the Dodd-Frank bill. Welcome back to the show, Bill. How are you today?
Fine, thank you, Bill.
Oh, good to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being my special guest. Let's start right into it, because one of the stated purposes of the Dodd-Frank Act was to protect consumers from abusive financial services practices. Yet we've already seen signs that the regulations cause consumers to pay higher fees for banking. Case in point, the $5 proposed fee to access your money using the Bank of America ATM card. As part of Dodd-Frank, Wall Street Journal recently noted the Federal Reserve has proposed limiting what banks can charge for debit card purchases from an average of 44 cents a transaction to 7 to 12 cents a transaction, which is a drop of 84%. So while the idea was scrapped by Bank of America and other banks to charge $5 a month for these transactions because they're losing the revenue elsewhere, banks do that. That's what they do. They have to increase their revenue. That's their job. So if we don't want fees in the banking industry, talk to us about Dodd-Frank and the impact that these fees are having on us or will have on us.
Well, you know, one thing about these fees, Bill, is the Senator Durbin from Illinois obviously had a lot to do with this coming against that $5 fee that B of A was going to originate. And given that, you know, the problem you run into here is that basically he said publicly, if you don't like the B of A, just go ahead and move to another bank, which, you know, could have caused a run on the bank. And things like that are pretty dangerous. As of June of this year, there were about 870 banks on what we call the troubled list. Now, let's take a look at Dodd-Frank and see exactly how that influences everything. It's a bill that's about 2,300 pages long. And the main problem with this bill is that it's based on a misdiagnosis of the causes of the crisis. The crisis dealt with subprime lending, Alt-A, option arms, negative amortization, those lending instruments, and they were leveraged and derivatives used against them. And you probably remember how the rating agencies rated these mortgage-backed securities AAA, mm-hmm. went into a lot of portfolios. One of the biggest problems I have with the bill is it guarantees bailouts to me as far as the eye can see. And if you want to address the real problems, it's not only that $5 fee and so forth, but take a look at the one item that they left out that was crucial, any reform for Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae. That had a lot to do with the misdiagnosis of the crisis. You know, you take institutions or regulators like the New York Fed. They had the power to stop Citibank lending in this subprime arena that went into mortgage-backed securities, sold not only domestically, but globally. And the, one of the problems is the bill vastly increases the power of the government in ways that are unrelated to the recent crisis. To me, what really bothers me is we still have the too big to fail. And that's something that can be very crucial, because today versus 08, guess what? The banks are bigger than what they used to be. So now I guess you have to call the bill too bigger to fail.
Well, let's talk about that. And can you put some numbers behind that? The banks are bigger. I've got some statistics here, and I'm sure you know that pre-crisis, the top 10 banks in the United States held 55% of the total assets in the banking sector. Today, 18 months later, because those banks were deemed too big to fail, we didn't want to put all of our eggs in one basket. Today, those top 10 banks now control 77% of the total assets in the banking sector. So instead of lowering the percentage that the top 10 banks, we've actually increased it by 22%, almost a full quarter more of our total assets are in the top 10 banks than they were before. How does that fully implement the spirit of the Dodd-Frank bill?
Well, you know, you talk about the spirit. You take J.P. Morgan Chase was around $1 trillion back in 08. They're $2.3 trillion in assets today. Jamie Dimon's a good banker, but part of the problem is nowadays the use of derivatives and leverage with the banking industry domestically has taken off. So given that, you could run into a problem where, like you say, Bill, 77% of the assets are in these big banks. It looks apparent with Dodd-Frank that they're too big to fail. You have got to take these banks when they get into trouble and break them up. Let's go back to that S&L and banking crisis. Remember back in 1990.
President George H.W. Bush. Yeah.
And there's a fellow that, look, we didn't have a TARP program there. The way it worked is that Seidman established an organization, you may still remember it, called the Resolution Trust Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And with the RTC, these banks, especially as big as they are today, if you don't meet the free capital requirements, you fail anyone, that's it. Seidman had you seized, and that was the end of the problem. We didn't have to have a TARP program. They just didn't abide by the existing regulations. And one of the biggest problems today, look what's going on with the Bank of America. Boy, Moynihan really has his hands full, because the price of that stock continues to decline. It's going down further. Dodd-Frank has caused a lot of these serious problems to take place because it did not address the problem. If you really want to get down to bare facts, one of the biggest problems the banks have today is all of this subprime lending that took place without any prudent underwriting securities. A lot of them were originated by, guess who? Freddie and Fannie, who were not a part of this whole problem at all. Look, Fannie's been around since 1938 under FHA. They privatized it in 68. Freddie Mac came along in 1970. Freddie was for the banks. Basically, Fannie was for the mortgage bankers. Why Dodd-Frank in the 2,300 pages left those two out to be reformed just amazes me. Then you add to that the size of these, let's call them money center banks, J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Wells Fargo, Chase. These are the big guys, and their assets have expanded. Remember a fellow by the name of Paul Volcker?
Yes, the Paul Volcker rule.
Paul Volcker and the Volcker rule, which says basically you cannot use your capital in the investment derivatives market. But I'll tell you what, when Glass-Steagall went away, why didn't Dodd-Frank bring back Glass-Steagall to separate core banking from all of the capital markets? So we're kind of looking at a whole new ballgame today. And when we take a look at banking over the time of overregulation, this is it. We didn't need Dodd-Frank. We had more than enough regulations in place to stop any crisis or correct it. But the problem is the regulators didn't enforce it. Not only the banking regulators, but the SEC also. Naked short selling, the uptick rule, mark-to-market accounting. What happened to the regulatory process?
Certainly the regulators failed. There's no doubt about it. My guest is Bill Sinclair. We're talking about the intended and unintended consequences of the Dodd-Frank bill and the gap between them. And that, remember, the Dodd-Frank bill is celebrating its 18th month anniversary here. And Bill, I want to dig in a little bit deeper, if we can, into one of your answers about too big to fail. Because embedded in the Dodd-Frank bill, supporters point to the new Orderly Liquidation Authority, or OLA for short. That means it's going to mitigate too big to fail. So you were talking about the Resolution Trust. You were talking about Seidman back in the early 1990s and the orderly way in which that was carried out. What about this new Orderly Liquidation Authority, and won't that do the same thing as the Resolution Trust did in the 1990s?
Well, I would hope so, Bill, but the one thing that they don't focus on with this new regulatory effort, part of the Dodd-Frank bill, is, look, you've got to be willing to take even these big money center banks, and when they get into trouble, you have to break them up. Over my 30 years in the business, I've gone into more than one bank, and we basically, you have to break them up. It's amazing the amount of subsidiary organizations that are related to the financial services arena that so many of these big banks own. I think a good example, go back to Citibank when they got into trouble back in 08. First, we gave them $25 billion of TARP money. Then we gave them an additional $20 billion. Then what the public didn't know is later on, $306 billion of their mortgage-backed securities, which were toxic, were guaranteed by the Treasury Department. Now, it's things like this that they ended up selling, trying to think of. They had a broker dealer, and I can't remember which one it was, that they owned the majority. Instead of selling for $5.6 billion, they sold 49% for $2.3 billion. You see the halfway effort they make toward breaking them up. You've got to sell assets, shrink the bank, and raise capital. That's what has to be done. And what frightens me is everything I've read about Dodd-Frank does not address those specific topics. More than once, like I say, I've been into banks where we sell good assets to increase the capital. At the same time, we have to shrink the size of the bank. And then when you go a little bit further down the road, you've got to end up with an institution that might be 40 or 50% of the size of the existing bank that gets into trouble. And I can't find anything in Dodd-Frank that addresses this properly. There is a new Consumer Protection Bureau. The problem with that organization, there's no oversight to it. And the people that are going to run that, apparently Elizabeth Warren was going to run it, but she stepped aside, and there's someone else named Cordray, I believe, coming in.
And he has not yet been approved by the Senate either, so he is still in limbo.
Absolutely. And, you know, they bring the wrong people in that don't have the experience. They're not what I call experienced pros in the business to understand the complexities of the business to fix the problem. And let me tell you, it's not rocket science. It's pretty simple, but you have to have the right people on board. And when I say break up these banks, if it looks like they're getting into trouble, and the thing that really concerns me about, we've been talking about this too big to fail part of the Dodd-Frank, is that so many of these institutions are still loaded with toxic assets. The mortgage market's a little over $11 trillion. Freddie and Fannie control $5.2 trillion of the 11, which is pretty scary. Now, there's a lot of way to resolve and to get to the bottom line of breaking these banks up, but what is very concerning to me is the fact that, look, these toxic assets, guess what? They don't include home equity lines of credit, personal loans, boat loans, car loans, you name it. They're just talking about the mortgage industry. In addition to that, there was a report came out last week from the Treasury, I believe, the regulatory agency, that had requested, especially the big money center bank, to disclose the amount of sovereign debt from these European bonds that they have in their portfolio. Apparently, the report was not as complete as it should have been, and there could be more risk there because, look, those bonds from that sovereign debt from Europe, that's not a 50% haircut. Those things are darn near zero. So let's take a look at the real asset bottom lines of not only the big money center banks. We have about 7,400 banks in the country today. There needs to be a very careful, thorough examination of the assets that these banks have on board, and they've got to write them down, they've got to meet the capital requirements, and if they don't, strict action has to take place, just like Bill Seidman performed back in the 90s.
Well, my guest is Bill Sinclair. We're talking about the Dodd-Frank bill. And on the subject of too big to fail, Bill, I would say that Standard & Poor's agrees with you because they recently noted that the future extraordinary government support is still possible even under the Dodd-Frank bill. But you mentioned the amount of money that we have spent in TARP money and in bailout money to these big money center banks. Banks have been criticized for not lending money during this economic downturn. In fact, there are many that are outraged that we, as Americans, gave so much stimulus money to these mega banks who then used the money to prop up their own balance sheets. So review how and why the stimulus money was used and the way that it was used when we doled out our bailouts to these big banks.
Yeah, let's take a look. Let's go back to 2008 when we had, remember the $700 billion bailout?
Yes.
Stimulus program?
Okay,
that was supposed to go to the financial services industry. As it turned out, only $245 billion of the $700 was dispersed. Another problem over that bill is, guess what? Quite a bit of money was dispersed to foreign banks, not only our bank. So out of the $245, guess what? We got back $251, so we made a little money. The problem is, that was a $700 package that was sold to us by Henry Paulson. So problem being, wait a minute, do we have all that money back? Apparently about 362 banks took down money from TARP. So as I said earlier, I don't believe we needed the TARP. We needed to enforce the regulations. Now let's take that a step further. I believe it was either the Chamber of Commerce or it could have been some of the trade associations with banks. 92% of small business owners reported either that all their credit needs were met or they were not interested in borrowing. Why? Because of all the new regulations that are coming out from the federal government and the uncertainty of what's taking place tax-wise. So, you know, you put that into the recipe, and boy, I'll tell you, that can really cause some eyebrows to go up. Right now today, I believe they are working on an additional 4,200 new regulations coming out of Washington for the private sector. A minimum of about 286 are going to go just to the bank. So if you're a CEO of a bank today and your board of directors, you've got to wonder what's going to happen with a from a tax liability standpoint, and take it a step further, what are these new regulations going to do to deteriorate the free enterprise of the banking system?
So, Bill, net it for us. Has Dodd-Frank benefited the economy here in the United States, yes or no?
No.
What symptoms do you see of that?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
What symptoms do you see that make you come to that conclusion?
Well, when you take a look at, Dodd-Frank has cost the banking system $15 billion in profit. There's one thing right there, because of the additional regulations. Let me give you a couple of ideas about some of the regulations that have been expanded. We have something called the Community Reinvestment Act. On top of that, we have Sarbanes-Oxley. We have Dodd-Frank. And it's amazing. There's a small bank here that I do a little consulting with in Southern California. It used to cost them, for their outside auditors on an annual basis, $250,000 for a complete audit. Guess what? After Dodd-Frank, CRA, Sarbanes-Oxley, cost them close to $1 million. Now, this is a little community bank. That shows you right there just how much overkill has taken place that really it's not necessary.
It does. It does, Bill. And we're going to have to leave it there. Bill, if you pique the interest of some of my listeners, they want to learn more about you, learn more about your profession, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Tell them to go to Promotion in Motion. That's Irwin Zucker, and he has a web page on me that my name will come up, and they can take a look at it from that standpoint.
That's promotioninmotion.net, and you can find out more about Bill Sinclair there. Bill, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Bill.